Right now, most churches are planning their budgets for 2009. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the sponsors page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
I've come to know this God of love who loves me as a gay man, and now God is leading us to the full inclusion of gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people.
It's very hard trying to do the Lord's work in the city of Satan.
Make no mistake, as someone who used to teach constitutional law, I believe deeply in separation of church and state.
The first Reformation was about belief. This one needs to be about behavior. It's not about creeds, it's about deeds.
Deeds, not creeds. In other words, we're going to stand before God now on the basis of our works and prove thereby that we're Christian.
Really doesn't make any difference what religion, world religion, small religion, old religion, new religion you look at. All of them, it seems, have some tradition that falls along these lines. Eating, what you eat and what you don't eat. Some religions are very complicated. They have strict dietary laws, and others afford their adherents an awful lot of freedom in what they eat, but all of them seem to have a common practice of fasting. Not eating for some period of time or denying yourself certain foods for some period of time. Now, Christians fast as a sign of repentance in order, as St. Paul would say, to mortify the old flesh. Why does the Muslim fast? Because one of the five pillars of Islam is, in fact, psalm, fasting. We're going to talk about that here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will be our guest, and you can join us as well. We're coming to you live this Monday, October the 13th. Give us a call right here in the studio. Our toll-free number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Or email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. After our conversation with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, we will spend a few minutes talking with Pastor Paul McCain, rounding off the first hour, part three of our weekly series on the Lutheran Confessions. Pastor Paul McCain of Concordia Publishing House will talk about the small called articles. It's one of those documents in the Lutheran Confessions, these historic documents of the Lutheran Reformation, actually penned by Dr. Martin Luther, the great reformer. Dr. Victor Raj will join us in the second hour, a short conversation with him on the persecution of Christians in India. You may have seen the story in the New York Times today about continuing Hindu persecution of Christians in India. Peter Wolfgang of the Family Institute of Connecticut is going to join us after that. We're going to talk about pro-gay marriage ruling by the Connecticut Supreme Court on Friday. Now, that's tied together with another story regarding states and gay marriage, that one from California. Of course, California has a ballot initiative coming up that would make gay marriage illegal in that state. And a lot of people say where California goes, the rest of the country will go as well. Randy Tomlinson of the Campaign for California Families will be our guest. And then we'll round off today's program talking about, well, listening to some of the things our listeners have been saying to us over our listener comment line. We got a lot of comments on the Issues Etc. listener comment line. We'll share some of those with you. We'll talk with you about that during some open lines, Issues Etc. listener comment line. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, author of the book The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. He joins us to talk about the fourth pillar of Islam, psalm, fasting. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back.
Well, thank you. You have me back again, right? So here I am.
Well, it seems as though most religions have dietary laws, and most religions have something akin to fasting. What sets the Muslim fourth pillar, fasting, apart from the others?
Well, in a number of ways. One, it's basically required during the month of Ramadan, where one is supposed to fast, if you can call it that. But the fast means that you don't eat or drink anything from sunrise to sunset, which, biblically speaking, when you look at some of the people who fasted, it was not limited to hours of sunlight. It was something you did for a number of days, sometimes weeks, with a minimal amount of food or intake, perhaps no food at all, except maybe water. And usually they weren't spelled out in terms of a required time that you had to engage in. In the month of Ramadan is a 30-day period. It ended on the end of, or 1st of October, actually end of September, 1st of October, the current Ramadan of this year, 2008, when every Muslim is supposed to seriously, religiously observe the fasting rules. That's one of the big differences, but there are also a couple of other differences. In addition to it being required at a given time of a year and for 30 days of the year, there are also aspects of it that, for example, it is seen as, and that's not perhaps a big surprise, in the Muslim world as a way of atoning for one's sins or gaining the favor of God. In fact, if you fast during the month of Ramadan, it is 30 times better than if you do it at other times outside of Ramadan, which, by the way, you may do voluntarily, and some do. How widespread it is, I do not know. But during the month of Ramadan, it is 30 times better than if you do it outside of the month of Ramadan, which would be voluntary rather than compulsory. So there's another difference that you have there. And also, in the month of Ramadan, according to some Muslim literature, at least tradition says that during the month of Ramadan, the gates of heaven are open and the gates of hell are closed, so much so that Satan is put in chains. Now, that's an interesting comment that is not too widely known, but it is found in the Islamic literature. By the way, the fast also includes, which is not necessarily true of other fasts that you had in the Old Testament or in some other religions, in the month of Ramadan, the fast includes not just abstaining from food and drink, but also abstaining from sex, abstaining from lying and cheating and other kinds of activities that you may engage in as well. So it's basically an emphasis on moralistic behavior that you're supposed to do to please Allah. And it differs to some degree with, again, the Shiites and the Sunnis. Most of the time when we talk about Islam, we talk about what goes on in the Sunni circles, primarily because they make up 85% of all Muslims worldwide. But there's also a difference relative to the Shiites, who make up roughly the other 15%, and most of them are found, for example, in Iran. They have some differences, too. They have also, for example, what's called Ashura, which is the 10th day of mourning for Muharram. 10th day of mourning is sort of a commemoration for the death of Hussein ibn Ali, namely the son of Ali, who was a relative of Muhammad's, basically a cousin and a son-in-law, who became the fourth caliph and then was murdered, and the Shiites trace their loyalty and origin to him, and they have what they call Ashura, A-S-H-U-R-A, which is basically a kind of festival where you engage in walking up and down the streets, sort of repenting for what has been done in the past when the Imams were deserted by the Shiite followers and left the Sunnis take over. And so they go up and down the street, often inflicting punishment on themselves, even drawing blood. It's been noted a couple of times in different contexts in the last year or two. So there's another different aspect of fasting, the swarm, as we would call it.
With only about a minute here before our break, there are apparently, I assume, connected in some way to the formal ritual fasting that Muslims are required to do during Ramadan, other dietary laws imposed upon the Muslim. With only about a minute here, how would you summarize those?
I mean, outside of dietary, I mean, other than dietary laws?
No, what are the dietary laws other than fasting that the Muslim would be obligated to observe?
Well, basically, you shouldn't eat or drink anything during the day, period, no matter what it is. By the way, there's one interesting thing. You are not even supposed to take medicine orally. You may get it by means of injection. Again, how well that is followed, I have no way of knowing. But it doesn't really make a difference, as far as I know, relative to what you're supposed to abstain from. It is everything.
When we come back from this break, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Alvin Schmidt. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, author of the book The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. You can join us as we come to you live this Monday, October the 13th, with questions or comments. Our ongoing conversation with Dr. Schmidt on the pillars of Islam. There are five in total, and we're on the fourth, swam, fasting. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, or talkback at issuesetc.org, talkback at issuesetc.org. Pastor Paul McCain will join us in about 10 minutes. We'll have part three of our weekly series with him on the Lutheran Confessions. We've done the first two documents in the Lutheran Confessions, the Augsburg Confession, the Apology, or the Defense of the Augsburg Confession. Those two penned by reformer Philip Melanchthon. The one we'll deal with in about 10 minutes, the small called articles, came from Martin Luther's pen. We'll talk about that in a little bit here on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We'll be right back. On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Lois Paskey, Gretchen Passantino Coburn, S.T. Reynolds, Mrs. Christy McMinn, Pastor Christopher Morris, Warren Lucht, Joshua Schultz, and Philip Lodine. Thanks for your support.
What is it, Captain?
Whatever it is, it's incredibly advanced.
Hey, iPhone users, you can now listen to Issues Etc. live on your iPhone. Find out by going to piratechristianradio.com and click the iPhone link on the homepage. You no longer have to sit by your PC, laptop, or home radio to listen to Issues Etc. live. piratechristianradio.com and look for the iPhone icon.
With something much, much more. And it's going to change everything.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor John Pless, on Treasury of Daily Prayer.
Ancient collects of the church are included along with newly crafted prayers, drawing together things old and new that will provide fresh springs from God's living words to edify and enlighten users for years to come.
A Christ-centered, cross-focused family devotional, Treasury of Daily Prayer, 1-800-325-3040, or find out more at our website, issuesetc.org.
Ah, the sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come. Join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30, and find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.
Welcome Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the fourth pillar of Islam, fasting during Ramadan. Dr. Alvin Schmidt, author of the book The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West, is our guest. When you go to our website tonight, issuesetc.org, we know so many of you visit there for our on-demand audio. I'd like you to take a look at the sponsors page, too, and there's a reason for that. We are looking for 300 congregations to help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by putting support for Issues Etc. in their congregational budget. It can be their mission budget, their advertising budget, their evangelism budget, wherever it fits in the congregation's judgment. And this way we can support the ongoing outreach of Issues Etc. We call it the Issues Etc. 300. For 300 congregations. You can find out all about it by going to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Click sponsors, and you'll find all the information you need and a printable flyer that you can take to your pastor or to the board of missions or advertising at your congregation that will explain everything they need to know about the Issues Etc. 300. Issuesetc.org. Click sponsors. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. Dr. Schmidt, before the break, you were talking about Muslims fasting outside the context of Ramadan. And you had mentioned that many Muslims will fast as a sign either of repentance or to make atonement for their sin. It strikes me that this would kind of be a vicious cycle for the Muslim, that if he feels like he might be on Allah's wrong side or Allah might not be looking favorably upon him, he would feel the need to fast even more. Is that often the case?
Well, logically speaking, I guess you could make that conclusion, but people don't usually behave logically, even though it would follow that way if you did think it through the way you expressed it. To my knowledge, not too many engage in it voluntarily. First of all, because Muslims or Islam, we should remember, is a very, very work-righteous religion. And this is just another example of it. And when you have it demanded, then, of course, the work righteousness, as I said a little while ago, during the month of Ramadan, is 30 times more valuable than if you do it outside. So there's not a great deal of motivation to do it outside the month of Ramadan. And given that fasting is ultimately, as physically, materialistically speaking, not a desirable thing for anybody because a human being likes to eat and drink. And so that is probably why there is very little of it outside of the month of Ramadan. I might also mention that, and this is rarely ever noted in any context, like the fasting for the 30 days is in some ways compensated for at the very end of the fasting. There is a festival. It's often referred to as Eid, E-I-D, Al, A-L, dash F-I-T-R, Al, or Eid al-Fitr, which is a festival of breaking the fast. It's a three-day celebration, and it begins on the very last day of Ramadan. We usually don't hear too much about it, but that, of course, is a great compensation factor for the people who endured the previous 29 or 30 days of fasting. And it's, like I said, a three-day festival where, by the way, you know, you can really celebrate for what you missed out on for 30 days previous to that. It's a major celebration, and it is also preceded very often by a minor festival, a light breaking of the fast, but this is the major one. And so, again, there is motivation to fast during the month of Ramadan because at the end, if I may use the word, there's more of a reward than there is if you do it voluntarily outside, where the reward would be primarily mental in terms of your satisfaction of having atoned for sins between you and Allah.
Is it true that the Muslim cannot, under any circumstances, participate or to take pork or alcohol? And if so, why?
Say that again. He may not what?
Is the Muslim restricted, even outside of the ritual fasting, from eating pork or drinking alcohol?
Oh, yes, by all means. Totally. Never is a Muslim supposed to drink any form of alcohol, nor eat any form of pork. In fact, it's a total taboo. I mean, it's just unthinkable. And that is to violate the food rule called halal, H-A-L-A-L. And there are places, for example, on our college campuses today where food is halal for Muslims may eat. And, of course, this means that there has been no pork anywhere in sight. Pork even touching another item of food would contaminate it. It's that bad in terms of the prejudice against pork. And similarly with liquor, you're not supposed to drink it whatsoever.
Why is that? Why is pork taboo, and why is alcohol taboo for the Muslim? Is there any rationale?
Well, the taboo on pork is a very interesting one. I've been reading and studying this sort of on my side for probably the last 35 years. As you know, it's also mentioned in the Old Testament. And Orthodox Jews to this day still observe that rule that pork is something that you do not eat. There have been different reasons suggested for it, that perhaps in the heat of the desert and the like, pork spoiled more quickly than any other food, and so it was seen as taboo and not to eat. These are all naturalistic explanations. The good Lord doesn't tell us in the Old Testament why pork was not to be eaten in the Leviticus laws. We just don't know. Just like we are not told to eat certain other items, for example, fish without scale, or animals that didn't have a split hoof. I would say, something they borrowed from the Semitic or the Eastern, Mid-Eastern cultures, that is, the Muslims borrowed it from that and just took it because it has always been something. By the way, it was taboo for Arabs to eat pork before the days of Muhammad. So nothing new there at all. And alcohol, again, the Old Testament does not forbid use alcohol, only forbids the abuse of it, not the mere use of it, whereas Muhammad went farther and just outlawed it altogether. And why he did, I really can't say, whether it was to distinguish themselves from the Jews, for example, for whom he had no love, or for other reasons. I really can't say definitively.
If a Muslim would not or did not observe Saum, that is the fasting during the month of Ramadan, the daylight fasting during the month of Ramadan, how would that be regarded among faithful Muslims?
Oh, very, very negatively. Very, very negatively. Be almost seen as equal of as an apostate, someone who has fallen from the religion. Note, I didn't say from the faith. I keep reminding people of that. You would have been seen as an apostate, as someone who really has fallen away. If it is one-time occurrence, maybe. But if a person does this consistently, no, he would be seen as an outsider, as basically an unbeliever, an infidel.
It seems odd that it would be a fast, a daily daylight fast, that would be broken by the come of nightfall, and then you can eat and drink whatever you please. It seems an odd kind of rhythm if it's intended to be a spiritual discipline. Quite different, I think, from the way Christians fast.
Yeah, it is. In fact, you might say it's a quasi-fast. It's really not a serious fast. Most people can survive one day quite well. There is sometimes a problem in the heat of these countries in the Middle East, for example, not to drink any liquid the whole day. That sometimes has caused some medical problems. But other than that, it's pretty much a harmless kind of thing. It's sort of performing a ritual without really having to endure a lot of pain or suffering, whereas the real fasts that we had and sometimes mentioned in the Old Testament, and even after some Christians would fast, they were painful. People lost a lot of weight. If you fast one day, as a rule, by the way, historically speaking, initially when these fasts came about with Muhammad, people did it a lot longer and a lot more intense. And Muhammad began to become concerned because people were losing a lot of weight and affecting their health. So basically, he curtailed the length of it and made it, you might say, more of a livable practice.
Well, with only about 30 seconds and no more, what will we be discussing next time when we talk about the fifth pillar of Islam?
Yeah, we'll be talking about the Hajj, H-A-J-J, usually how it is spelled. Basically, the Muslim annual pilgrimage to Mecca,
which attracts millions of people and has been doing this for a long, long time. And so, and it gets a lot of attention, and every Muslim who can at all afford to engage in the Hajj should do so at least once in his or her lifetime.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. Dr. Schmidt, thanks for being our guest.
My pleasure. Thank you.
When we come back from this break, we're going to continue an ongoing conversation with Pastor Paul McCain of Concordia Publishing House. We're talking about the Lutheran Confessions, these documents dating back to the time of the Lutheran Reformation. They were written over a rather long period of time. They were written by various people toward various ends. In the end, they were all gathered together and finally deemed to be the public confession of those who follow the Lutheran stream of the Reformation. Well, we've come through the first two, and one might say the first, historically, the first two steps of the Reformation, the Augsburg Confession and the apology to the Augsburg Confession, that is, its defense. Now we're going to turn to the small called articles. These are penned by Dr. Martin Luther. In some ways, it's Luther at its best, and it's also been called Martin Luther's last will and testament. We'll find out why with Pastor Paul McCain after this.
LCMS Inc. canceled this? You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener supported. We rely upon you to pay for the production, salaries, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. That's Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Nebraska recently passed a safe haven law designed to allow women of newborn infants to abandon their babies at approved locations without legal repercussion. Normally, these laws have been viewed in a positive light because they encourage women to drop off their babies and not leave them in a dumpster to die. But in compromise wording, Nebraska's version changed the word infant to child, which then wasn't defined. As a result, parents are abandoning children up to 17, including 9 in one family. Nebraska's good intentions ended up doing more harm to children by encouraging their parents to abandon them. Legislators should act quickly to fix the problem. Abortion has always caused people to look at children as mere property. We don't need legislation reinforcing it.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.